Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the biggest stories in European football. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Carlidge.
On this edition, after a somewhat lacklustre performance in the Nations League, is the cry of less Ronaldo, more Portugal, a Lisbon treaty too far. Also, voodoos and hoodoos notwithstanding, why is the current French team such a pile of merde? And as club football returns across the continent, David is here to put up a staunch defence of Barcelona. Not that they need it. Talking of which, you've both been watching the international football over the last couple of days, over the last week. What's caught your eye? David, first.
Yeah, sure. It's the boys from Serbia who are catching my eye. I feel like they're perennial dark horses when they do go to a tournament. Everybody's always like, oh, watch out for Serbia. You know, they've got some nice individuals from around Europe. But I do actually feel this time they are true dark horses. I think they could cause a lot of teams problems. They're very much in their pomp right now. They're looking nice defensively. They play out from the back very smartly. And then when you go into that midfield and their attack, when you've got Kostic, Milinkovic, Savic, and Tadic supplying Vlahovic and Mitro, then I think, you know, that is exciting within itself. And, you know, they won their group in the UEFA Nations League. They've secured their pot two for the Euro qualifying draw as well. So even outside of the World Cup, they're looking long-term, I think. The squad's a good age. I'm really, really impressed by them on every angle. And they, I think for me, they're the main team to watch going into the World Cup in terms of dark horses.
Andy, in terms of dark horses, where'd you go?
You know what? Firstly, I want to say Denmark for last because he's not here. And obviously their shirt reveal is a very interesting one this week, which the Qatar Organising Committee have already responded to. But the thing that caught my eye this week was actually more of a club thing. I mean, he's an internationalist, of course, but the great Claudio Pizarro has retired. They had his tribute match in Bremen. It was always going to be in Bremen. He played for Werder Bremen in 5 spells, no less, as well as being at Bayern Munich a couple of times. So there were matches between Werder, Vintage Werder, Vintage Bayern, and Claudio's Amigos to cover it all off. And it was beautiful. Of course, he's the oldest scorer in Bundesliga history, as well as the second highest overseas scorer in Bundesliga history. Until he was first until Robert Lewandowski completely blew him off the charts. But Pizarro was a great player, great personality that people love. You know, you look at all the people who turned up like to play, like Max Kruse, Owen Hargreaves was there, Hans Jörg, but and the great Johan Miku, one of my absolute favourite playmakers, who should have been Zidane's successor, never quite happened, can still play a bit of 49. So it was beautiful to see.
Let's talk about, well, I want to talk about Portugal versus Spain, but actually, should we talk about Cristiano Ronaldo? I can't believe that the Portuguese media are on his case after being the talisman for his nation for a couple of decades now, at the very least, I would have thought. They've decided they've had enough of him, Andy. What's going on there?
Well, you talked about it at the top. There was that incredible headline in Abola, one of the dailies, less Ronaldo, more Portugal. I mean, that was less a call to arms, more a comment on the way Portugal are actually going. Because, you know, that he scores a lower proportion of their goals now. And that they have a greater balance. And that's something that they've been looking for a while. I thought... this was about 5 minutes away from being a very successful international window for Portugal, until that late Alvaro Morata goal stole the final space in the final four of the Nations League. But I think you look at the previous game in Czech Republic, they played really well, won 4-0 against a good team. And I think that the thing that everyone really noticed about that in Portugal is that Bruno Fernandes is finally off the leash. And that was an issue going back as recently as the Euros, which is less than a year and a half ago. And in that, there was a sense that everything was still very geared towards Ronaldo, that Fernandes was kind of stymied, left out. They weren't getting the best out of him. And you know, given what an influential player he's been for Manchester United, form dips notwithstanding over the last year, you know, that's a huge problem. You know, they need to move on from that, and they can't rely on Ronaldo so much. But with that said, I would say, David, that Fernando Santos has been consistently ahead of the curve in defining what Ronaldo should do and where he should be, like more so than his club coaches, really, at Juventus and United, where he's become this sort of five-star albatross, really, over the last couple of years, which is such a curious position for one of the greats of the game. But I think they are managing to get him to accept a subordinate role, just as they managed, going back to 2016, to create a system in which he wasn't required to do much running because, you know, he wasn't physically up to it at the time, and, you know, he still can't press off the ball and that sort of stuff. But what do you make of his role, David, for Portugal as compared to with the clubs?
I think the defining feature here is Portugal, the sheer amount of talent that Portugal have coming through. I think the pressure now on Santos and on Ronaldo as well, in terms of the talent coming through, is significant there. You've got Rafael Leão, Pedro Neto, João Félix, all waiting for those attacking berths, I think. And I think you've got a nation, Portuguese fans, who are waiting for those players to come into the fold and to be the fore of the country. It's been a long time going now with Ronaldo. There's been success. There's been some underwhelming moments as well. But ultimately, I think it's okay now. It's a good time to move on. I think it's a fantastic luxury to have him as a bit part player, somebody coming from the bench, potentially, you know, to get a goal late in the game, or to be a presence on the break, perhaps in the last 15, 10 minutes. He can't be a starter anymore with Portugal, I don't think. I think when he does start, if he is the focal point of this Portugal team, he holds them back. I think when Santos chooses to go that direction, I think he then holds them back as well. There's too much excellent talent, I think, in Portugal to keep massaging this Ronaldo ego, to massage this swan song. He can go out in style, he really can, in a different type of role. I think we've seen in other team sports as well that veterans can play a significant part without actually being the main, you know, source of that team, the main source of success for that team. And I think he's got to accept that. I understand that he probably won't easily, it's how Ronaldo is, but I think it is that time. And I think if they don't, then Portugal will suffer at the World Cup.
But when you look at the match against Spain, and it's a good example, that match of, you know, you can have as much possession as you like, you know, it only takes a goal to undo all your hard work throughout the match. But when you look at that match, Ronaldo's chances were best half chances, weren't they? I mean, the frustration of the team and the fans, I can understand, but if you don't feed the goat, he ain't going to, I mean, feed him with some distance, he ain't going to get the goals, is he?
It's funny, Doc. Now, I think the chances that he had were chances that he made look half chances. I think through his own rustiness, which is a bit of an issue. Now, he did manage to contribute in that game at Czech Republic. I don't think there's any doubt about that. In a kind of weird way, obviously, by getting his face smashed in, by giving away a pen, and then by setting up that one for Diogo Jota. Not the sort of Ronaldo hat trick that we're used to. But in this game, he looked a bit snatchy and anxious. You know, you saw that one chance where he didn't control it properly in the second half, and that was Portugal's last real chance of substance until he had that one just after Morata had scored. And I kind of feel that he ended up going the distance in both of these games because I felt that Santos felt that he needed to get Ronaldo fit. Because maybe the concern is he's not going to play enough at Manchester United, David, to get him into the zone that Portugal need him.
I just thought Portugal played for the draw. I thought, you know, which Santos often does. I thought Portugal played for the draw. I thought, I'll never forget that they did it against Serbia when they played for a draw as well. When, you know, when they ended up missing out on an automatic World Cup qualification as well. I thought, we'll get on to Spain soon, but I thought, you know, Luis Enrique, for all of his criticism, he was proactive. He was like, I want to win this game. I can see an avenue, an opening here to win this game. He made the changes, he was decisive, and he went to win that game, and they won that game. Santos did not, and they lost that game. And this is what I mean, where I could see this being an issue at the World Cup. I feel there's a pattern here with a lot of nations. Portugal are one of them, France, we'll get on to them, and they're another one. That they haven't rectified their issues from a previous tournament and they're kind of overlying going into this World Cup, and there are the biggest factors and the biggest question marks hanging over some of these major nations.
So the question was less, or the statement was less Ronaldo, more Portugal, and that statement has been, I suppose, captured by an Instagram message we've got from the Kirk man, who says, Ronaldo with Portugal, is he still considered an asset then? Or is he becoming the issue?
I think there's a bit of both, definitely. Like I said, I think that Fernando Santos felt that he had to get him into nick rather than making those decisive changes. And I think David's absolutely right to bring up the juxtaposition between the way that Santos played it and the way that Luis Enrique played it. Do you think that Nico Williams made an enormous impact on the game? You know, he absolutely changed the game. And on the other hand, João Félix gets brought on in, what, the 89th, 90th minute? I mean, what are you meant to do with that, really? You know, you saw him making that foul at the end and the frustration was evident. You know, that was their last chance to get it up the pitch and he was over-eager to get on with it, having been sitting there kicking his heels for however long. So I think it's not Ronaldo in terms, just Ronaldo in terms of a declining force, which is the issue for Portugal, I don't think. I think it's what sort of nick is he going to turn up at the World Cup in? Because I think even if you want him to play that truncated role that David's talking about, you have to be fit. I mean, he had, what, half a pre-season at best because he was unsettled, clearly had some family issues that he was given time off for and all the rest of it. But, you know, his whole game has always been based around being at the absolute top of it physically. Now, we saw with Messi, who's, you know, still a couple of years younger than him, he had no pre-season to speak of and the last season, and that was incredibly damaging to his form last season. You know, you can't turn up in the modern game. You can be the greatest player in the world. If you turn up and you haven't had a proper pre-season, you're not going to be a nick. And that is what we are seeing at the moment, I would say.
after suffering a defeat to Switzerland, surely one of the questions for the Spanish team must be, you know, you beat Portugal 1-0, but you lose to Switzerland 2-1. What's going on there?
This is the Luis Enrique era in a nutshell. It's a roller coaster. I think we saw what Spain were like at the Euros. I thought they were the most entertainment team in there, not in terms of actually their style of play, but just their games. I just thought they were full on. It was a really, really just a heavy, heavy ride watching them. And it continues that. I still think parts of their play are a little bit demure, a little bit boring, a little bit sideways. I think a large part of that is because Luis Enrique still has never... I don't know when he's ever had everyone that he wants on the field. You know, there was players missing here, the likes of Laporte, Thiago. I think they need to be brought in to really enhance this Spain team. There's a clear negative there, a clear flaw there with their defence. There's big issues there. For me, the biggest question mark is with Spain is their defence. The hope is, I know from Luis Enrique's part, is that Laporte will come back, get back in the Man City team, get full fitness ahead of the World Cup, and he'll be there and he'll provide that strength and presence in defence that has been lacking since the figure of Sergio Ramos left the setup.
Yeah, I think the defensive thing is a big deal for them. And I don't know about you, David, I thought it was a case of addition by subtraction to a certain point in that... No, Eric Garcia left me feeling a little bit more comfortable about what Spain have, because I just really don't think he's at the level that Spain or Barcelona really need. I think as well, we've got to put it into perspective. I mean, sometimes we look at the result and work backwards. It's something I talk about a lot, I suppose, but... you know, I think we do have to say, like, for the first, before, as you say, Portugal started to settle for the draw, for the first 60 minutes, they were the better team, even though they had less of the ball. And it felt like Spain had a lot of the ball without really doing that much with it. In terms of the attacking part, and during that, you know, they defended, I would say, globally pretty well, but they needed Unai Simon to have one of his very good nights, and I did think he was very good. He made a couple of very good saves in the first half in particular. But where you always look for Luis Enrique to step away from that Spanish tiki-taka cliche is you always felt that Barcelona and Spain under Luis Enrique can be a little bit more vertical. Nico Williams really helped them to do that. And Morata being on the pitch really helps them to do that. You look at the front three that they go in with against Switzerland in a game that, I mean, you know, they must have wake up in cold sweats thinking about Switzerland, the amount of ones they've had pulled on them by Swiss teams over the last 10 years. But, you know, you look at the front three they went in with there. Three players who aren't really playing in Sarabia, Asensio, and Ferran Torres at club level. And this time, whatever Morata's faults, he is an authentic number nine. He can do the number nine stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and that is massively important to them. I mean, David, would you go as far as when we reach a World Cup, would you start with Morata and Nico Williams?
Yeah, I would. Look, I've been one of the biggest critics of Morata over the years. I really have at all of his clubs. But you know what? He's one of the first names I put on that team sheet. Absolutely. The players either side of him, I wouldn't. So in this instance, Ferran and Sarabia, it's just not working. They're natural footed wingers and they're being used out wide. I think it's very predictable. They don't have the dribbling ability. If you're going to have natural footed wingers outside in wide areas, you need to have high levels of dribbling ability. Neither of them have that. Ferran, for whatever reason, I don't know why, has stopped dribbling. When he was at Valencia, his dribbling stats and such and his take-ons were out of this world. He hasn't done it at Barcelona. I thought he didn't do it at Man City when he was there as well. He certainly doesn't do it with Spain. There are some brilliant talents there who thankfully Luis Enrique has other players to call upon. I think Ansu Fati and Nico Williams both have to go. I think they are jokers in the pack. You have to take them in games that are 0-0. Spain's going to have a lot of very, very tight games, I think. And they're the sort of players who can come on and really unsettle any defence. If there's 15 minutes to go, you're a little bit fatigued, and Ansu or Nico or both are warming up and about to come on, you're bricking it, because you know that they are just going to go for the throat the way that they play.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Of course, the Nations League has thrown up all sorts of matchups that, to be fair, start catching my eye this week. And we'll come on to the fortunes of Germany in a second. But I think we should start off talking about France. And this question, this tweet by Jimmy to the B, is the one that everybody, I suppose, is echoing. I'm sorry for the French. What the fuck is going on with France?
Oh, Dalton, I mean, we've only got a section and we've got to fit Germany in there as well. There's a lot going on with France at the moment. There's a lot. And maybe, I think it's sort of gone under the radar to a certain extent. Certainly from a British perspective, because I think a lot of people have looked at England and where they are. I heard... someone said to me, like earlier this week, for example, what's happened to England? They were joint World Cup favourites with France, and now look at them. But, you know, I think that really doesn't take into account what's happened to France, you know, and do they still deserve to be favourites for this competition? And I think there's a question mark over it. They've got problems on and off the pitch. I mean, there's the whole Pogba blackmail thing. Will he even be fit? I think is another side to that. There's Noël Legrès, the president of the French Football Federation. Him and the federation have been accused of covering up complaints of sexual misconduct. So that's something that's going to run and run. There's the fact that Kylian Mbappe has been refusing to do group promotional activities. And I think this is something we could come back to actually, because in future weeks, because I think Kylian Mbappe is not only an incredible footballer, but someone who could be a trailblazer for how elite level footballers are in the future. And, you know, you've never had like previous best in the world players like Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi going, actually, yeah, I'm not going to promote this product for Argentina or Portugal. I refuse to do that. But, you know, it's been something that's been tricky for the FA. But I think people will look at him and think, okay, well, he's taking a stand and, you know, marking out his own territory. I think it's quite interesting. Of course, there'll be people who will say in response, well, aren't you playing for PSG, etc., etc., etc. It's a huge discussion that we could have somewhere else. But so there's that. On the pitch, I think they clearly have issues of experience in midfield, because if Pogba's not going to be there, maybe even N'Golo Kante is not going to be there, that means a lot is leaning on Tchouaméni and Camavinga, which could work out really well. They've got defensive issues along with half the teams in the competition. There's a lot going on. I don't think we should automatically assume that they're the favourites, basically.
That is worrying, isn't it? Not just for France. I'd have thought just for any World Cup fan, David, given that France are the champions. First of all, you would expect them to go into a World Cup organised, you know, with their mayored together, as it were. However, here we're looking at the prospect of the world champions just 4 years ago imploding just ahead of a World Cup. It couldn't have happened at a worse time.
Yeah, it's absolutely not looking good. But again, following on from our Portugal discussion, I think there were some clear issues there with France a few years ago at the Euros. I still don't know whether they've been fully addressed. We've mentioned at the start of this section all the things that are going on with France without mentioning another one as well, and that's the figure of Zidane, which just I just think continues to loom over this France squad and the potential of him coming in. It is just always there. I thought, and there'll be people looking at Deschamps' comments on Saliba and Camavinga, especially Camavinga, saying that he saw some things that he doesn't like to see or he doesn't want to see, which I thought were really poor. And I also think targeting the young players, the inexperienced players, was an attempt to get them off the hook, I think, when it's probably the more experienced players who need to be looked at. From judging by that France performance, judging by recent France performances, I don't think it's the young players who need to be targeted. I think it's the more experienced players. I think the likes of Griezmann, Mbappe could be, you know, looked at closer in terms of what they are doing, their contributions. And yeah, with that in mind, people automatically think, look, these guys, Camavinga, Tchouaméni, Saliba, they're starting to come now into the squad. Is that in turn a time for a change of coach who can't integrate them, who can't use them, who can't take France forward?
And again, I ask you a question. Who would you rather be going into the World Cup? We've got two former world champions, or the most recent world champions, France, and before that, Germany. Would you rather be the German coach going into this World Cup at the moment, or the French coach, Andy?
Deschamps, without a shadow of a doubt, he's got the better players. He's got a genuine chance of winning the competition. I'm not sure Germany really fall into that category because they are far further back on a rebuild. I feel for a tournament, like France can probably patch those holes and get it together. And I think if you look at France's tournament history, go back to World Cup 1998 and they had a very, very difficult lead up. You know, you think a year before the tournament, you know, fans were in French stadiums chanting for Aimé Jacquet, the coach, to be booted out. And it was all right on the night.
Can we take Germany serious, though, as contenders in the World Cup? We always assume that they're going to step up to a certain level in a tournament. And no doubt this tournament won't be any different. But can we take them seriously as contenders, Andy?
I think this tournament will be different. I think this assumption that we're getting the tournament Germans when we get to the World Cup is a sort of denial of what's really happened over the last 10 to 20 years. You know, you think the sort of players they produce now, it's very different. You know, the model for producing players in Germany, there's a lot of flair. I think when you look at their defenders, sometimes you feel there's maybe too much flair in some of those cases. I mean, you look at the way they, you know, chucked away a winning position at Wembley, and of course England did really well to come back. Again, they're another of these teams that defensively have issues. I think you look at Nico Schlotterbeck, for example, who's the future of the team in so many ways, but he's a great footballer who's still learning to be a great defender, I would say. And, you know, David touched on it before with Sergio Ramos. He went through that stage. So it's not saying that Schlotterbeck won't become world class, but I don't think he's there yet. The tackle he made on Bellingham to give away that penalty was absolutely crazy. And almost the most Dortmund thing ever, you know, important Dortmund player one injures important Dortmund player two in the same action in an international like 10 days before the Clásica. It's just one of those things that only Dortmund could do, really. But Jude seems to be okay. But I think, you know, Germany are going to be entertaining rather than consistent, which is, I think, the opposite of what people of a certain generation expect from Germany at a tournament. Like David says, ton of good attacking players. I think if they can't have Kimmich and Goretzka together in the middle of the park, I think that fatally compromises them. And just that defence, I mean, like, before we even get to the central defence, Jonas Hoffmann, who again is a terrific footballer, is not a right back, but he's going to end up playing right back. You're going to have a very, very busy Manuel Neuer there, I think, in Qatar.
Yeah, David, from what we're hearing, it's the wrong time to be rebuilding, isn't it? Absolutely the wrong time.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, any rebuilding that you start to do should have been done post-Euros. That's when you start putting down your foundations. First year, you kind of say, right, it's coming together now. I see where I want to go with this. And then that next year, you kind of say, right, this is the team we're going forward with, and this is the team I'd ideally like to take to the World Cup. So it should have already been done. So if you are still looking to fill gaps right now, I think that's concerning, especially when you look at the lack of football. There's going to be no football played between now and the start of the World Cup as well. So practice is over with. It's going to be when you get to your training camp figuring things out. So nothing competitive, which is a big, big issue. In the case of Germany, purely watching them, looking at them, I think their high line, as entertaining as it makes them, as Andy pointed out, it is also going to be their downfall. I think it's absurdly high and wild at times. I think it's going to create a lot of interesting games, as we saw against England, who are not an interesting team. It created an interesting game, I think largely because of that. So yeah, they're going to be, you know, exciting from that level. But I think they need, again, go back to this phrase, jokers in the pack. We talked about Ansu Fati and Nico Williams. I think Germany need one. I think they need to get Florian Wirtz fit. I think he needs to be somebody take to potentially add a little something. And you know what? I'm going to be even wilder here. I'd be looking very closely between now and the World Cup how Moukoko fares at Borussia Dortmund as well. And I'd be honestly thinking about taking him and having him on the bench.
Tell us more. Why does he need to be there?
Because Germany lack a number nine. They lack a presence. They lack a striker. Somebody who can poach, who can get goals. They've always had one. They've always had that type of player. They need one right now. And I think the young man from Borussia Dortmund is... He has to be watched. He has to be looked at. He has to be considered.
It's funny, actually, David, when you talk about Moukoko there and you're saying Germany need that number nine, I was thinking Dortmund do as well. You know, there's increasing pressure in Dortmund, especially after that derby winner against Schalke where he came on to score, and that meant so much to him. There's a growing sense in Dortmund that he should be replacing Modest, despite the fact that they obviously paid a lot of money in terms of contract as much as anything else to get Modest in and short-term replace Sebastian Haller. It is time for him to step aside, at least for the moment, and Moukoko to play. You know, he's quite experienced for someone of 17 years old. I think the best thing about Germany, as you say, is their youth. The only thing is, when you said, I'm going to go even more left field, I was like, is he going to say Max Kruse? I mean, he's only just about training with Wolfsburg at the moment. I mean, there's an injury to him in training this week that might held him back. But after Niko Kovac said he's not a Bundesliga player anymore, I was thinking, right, okay, that's wild. I mean, they did create a Lego figure of him for Euro 2016, so it's got to be taken seriously to an extent, right?
Now, work with me, guys. I'm going to try and stitch the last conversation about Germany with the next conversation, which we're going to La Liga to talk about Barcelona, who've done really well defensively. I've got some injury worries going forward now in La Liga, and the international break probably hasn't helped them.
No, absolutely not. It's really hindered them, and they're going to have to... You know, Xavi's going to have to think outside of the box here, and I think he might be okay, you know. They've started very well defensively. I think there's a nice defensive system there in play at Barca. When they had this crazy summer that everyone was talking about, a lot of the focus was on attacking players. They got Koundé, they got Christiansen, they got Hector Bellerin in the end as well, but I think they needed another major defensive sign for me. It was always going to be one injury, probably to Koundé, that was going to hit them hard. That injury has now happened. I think they go Frankie de Jong or Francesi in terms of a centre-back, somebody who can drop in there. I think both have played there before. Both can do that role. So I think that could be the solution short-term for them. And then in January, they're going to have to work their magic in the market once again.
Yeah, best defensive record in La Liga at the moment, Andy. They're not going to be able to keep that record of only having conceded one in this season's tournaments or matchups. They're not going to be able to keep that record for much longer, are they?
Well, it might be tough. I think it's the timing of it as much as anything else. I mean, clearly, it looks like Araujo is going to be out of the World Cup because he's elected to have surgery, quite rightly. He's got to look at his long-term future. He's a good young player. And, you know, Koundé could be a little bit compromised. It might be tight for him anyway. I mean, in one sense, this might cause a great deal of recrimination, because if you're looking at it with your sensible hat on, you're always thinking during the summer, why are they picking up? I mean, these are centre backs, obviously, but why are they picking up, if we're talking about the defence as a whole, full backs on a free when they're spending more money than God on like forwards that they don't necessarily need? And you know, they've had to force out Aubameyang and mothball Ferran Torres to make it all balance, really. And you know, they would have got rid of a few others if they could have. I always felt they didn't really have the cover they need. Maybe this will be shown up, because we've got this Champions League doubleheader against Inter. They've got El Clasico in a couple of weeks as well, and Real Madrid are obviously absolutely flying, and you have to say they've got reasonable strength in depth as well from their perspective. On the other hand, what David was talking about before about Frankie de Jong, who could do a great job, I think, dropping in there, or Kessier. And then you're looking at Sergi Roberto at right back, which is, you know, they can't get away from it through several eras of Barcelona. You always have to have Sergi Roberto at right back. I think you'd have to say that he's a better right back than Hector Bellerin at this point as well. It's not necessarily a bad thing. And remember, if we're going all the way back to 2009 and the first season of Guardiola, well, they won the Champions League with Yaya Touré at centre back. So who knows?
It's time for me to ask you both to recommend a game of the week for us. Lots to choose from. I suppose we're back to club football now, and, well, we're chomping at the bit as well. Who wants to go first in terms of a game of the week? Andy, you got one?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Saturday tea time. I'm going to go to Italy. Inter versus Roma. I think it's a really interesting one that you might miss the first 15 minutes of because of UK broadcasting regulations, but I'll leave you guys to figure it out. It's a really interesting one because Of course, because Inter have had those three defeats already. They were beaten badly by Udinese just before the international break. Roma had their reverse as well against Atalanta, although they played really well in that. They were pretty unlucky. It just feels that if either of these teams are going to get themselves really in the title mix, especially with the high standard of that final game before the break when Milan played Napoli, I don't think either team wants to be losing this already. And, you know, I think the moods at Inter and Roma are very different at the moment. You know, everyone's very much behind Project Mourinho. You look at the way the Olympico's like selling out pretty much every week at the moment. It's absolutely unprecedented. But what Roma are not managing to do is put it in the back of the net as much as they should be able to do with the sort of attacking players that they've got. So we expect a little bit more from them. Inter's fans definitely expect a lot more of them. So yeah, it's going to be one to watch. It's going to be fantastic.
And Andy, what would you eat with that tantalising matchup, Roma versus Inter?
You know what? This is a game where there's so much happening. It's going to be all on the go. And I think because it's relatively early, you want to go quite snackish. So I am going to say, let's all make French bread pizzas together. Get some good quality French bread. Get some rustic Italian ingredients. Let's just freestyle. Let's grill it in 5 minutes. It's going to be amazing.
That's Amore, apparently. Or a Moorish, yeah.
I thought you said that's Tamori. If only it was this week. If only it was.
And David, the UK broadcasting regulations notwithstanding, what would you recommend?
Yeah, for my game of the week, I'm also going Saturday. It's going to be Saturday, 5:30 kickoff, and that's Sevilla versus Atletico Madrid. Lopetegui, he's still there. He's still there. He survived the international break. But for how long, we don't know. I think this is the sort of game that you either kickstart your season in, you turn the tide and win everybody over and really build from, or people say that absolutely nothing has changed in that time. And you are very much onto a losing thing, and then the only thing you can do is remove Lopetegui from his role. Atleti are definitely going to be, going to come and make things very, very difficult, as they will. It's going to be a frustrating game, I think, at times of Sevilla. But I think we're going to see, we're going to learn a lot more about Sevilla, I think, after this game and where they are and what has changed within them. So yeah, that's my recommendation there. And as in for some food with that, I think we're going to go for a classic Spanish tortilla with that, and get a nice bit of bread there as well. So really carb up.
Nice and simple, unlike the match.
Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.